Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Viewpoints podcast series on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel with my colleague Burkhard Varnholt, where we do like to discuss the global markets and economy. Let's begin with a timely topic as we have reached the first 100 days of the Trump administration. Burkhard, I'm curious to hear how the first 100 days of the administration shaped up for markets and investors around the world.
Well, sure, Dan. That's very timely. And it's clear that since Inauguration Day, the world has changed. The world has changed, but of the global uncertainty that followed, especially Trump's Liberation Day announcement, Wall Street has clearly borne the brunt. In our global performance derby round to the digits, the U.S. MSCI remains the second worst performing country this year with a decline of roughly 6%, even though it's been recovering as of late. But it still trails the 6% gain for the All Countries World ex-U.S. Index. If you look at the major regions, LATAM is leading with a gain of around 18%, followed by EMU up around 17%, Europe up around 13%, All Countries World ex-US, and then followed by emerging markets up 2%. Looking at the major country markets, Spain leads with a gain of 30%, followed by Mexico up around 22%, Germany up around 23%, Brazil up around 17%, Sweden up around 14%, China up around 9%, and India around flattish. And meanwhile, the dollar index, the DXY, at least has lost 8% against other currencies, while gold is really the shining star of this year, as it already started to become last year. And looking ahead, however, our view, as I mentioned last time, is that Wall Street has been stirred, not shaken. Take, for example, the 10-year yield. While it spiked from 4 to 4.5% right after President Donald Trump announced his new tariff policies, it's now back down to 4.20. After all, it seems that bond markets may not so easily be shaken. And what's more, the outlook for Fed easing is somewhat more tangible following last week's interview by the more dovish Fed Governor Christopher Waller, who argued, I quote, that he would expect more rate cuts and sooner once he starts seeing some serious deterioration in the labor market. And he also reiterated the view that Trump tariffs should only be temporary. So look, Dan, we absolutely do expect Wall Street to fully recover its losses and also to set new record highs over the coming year. And we're just as mindful saying that many asset allocators are, you know, frankly, just looking for calmer waters. They're putting capital at work in Europe, LATAM, and across Asia where they feel valuations are cheaper and things might not be as noisy. And that great rotation has arguably, as we've discussed a few times this year, been an unintended side effect of Donald Trump's first 100 days.
Well, Burkhard, thank you for that sense of perspective as to how global markets have shaped up over the past few months. One country which we haven't really spent much time on lately, that being China, it is fair to say that the China-U.S. tariff conflict is really an unsustainable situation, as Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent has repeatedly indicated over the past few days. And yet Wall Street and investors, Burkhard, are still trying to figure out where this large conflict will ultimately take us.
Well, sure. Well, look, China hasn't blinked, and it may well not do that. Even while Donald Trump has been raising tariffs like an auctioneer, first it was 10%, then 20%, then 54%, then 104%, 125%, then 145%. And yet, it seems that the telephone line from Beijing never really rang. There are conflicting reports about that. And instead, it seems that President Xi called Tokyo and Seoul to discuss a free trade deal with Japan and South Korea. And surely he and his team also called and visited officials in Southeast Asia and Europe. It's clear that China will be hurt by losing the U.S. market, but China, for its term, seems to be betting that the U.S. will be hurt more. arguably that view could have been confirmed when Trump exempted smartphones, laptops, and other electronic categories from U.S.-China tariffs, raising the question, at least in Beijing, so what's the point of a trade war if everyone gets a carve-out? See, let me mention a few things which I think investors should be cognizant about China. For one, it's really been preparing for this for the last 10 years since the Trump 1.0 administration. That's why it has repeatedly invested in its Belt and Road strategy to precisely access and open new export markets to diversify its production chain. Today, only 29% of Chinese exports go to the G7 country. That's remarkable because it's down from 48% in the year 2000. Today, China's biggest customers are the Asian countries, followed by the European Union, while the U.S. is now China's number three market. China is today the biggest trading partner to some 60 countries. That's roughly twice as many countries as the U.S., giving it room for asymmetric reactions, if you will. And then, see, China still has this Mao Zedong era ethos of Qi Ku, as they call it, which is literally translated to say, eat bitterness. Seems that in authoritarian China, President Xi doesn't really need to stand for election. And his government has numerous tools to react and retaliate as it wants to. It could, just by way of example, squeeze American farmers. It could dump $760 billion of U.S. Treasury, which it owns. It could also tax made in China goods. It could, I don't think it will do that, devalue the yuan, or even confiscate manufacturing facilities. I'm not suggesting it'll do that, but those thoughts may well be on the back of people's minds. See, in the West, investors usually follow the money. In the East, I think it's wise to follow President Xi's travel itinerary. It's no coincidence that this month he visited Cambodia, Vietnam, and Malaysia. All these three countries were hit by direct tariffs of 49%, 46%, and 24%, respectively. And then, to turn to more positive stimulus, China could soon announce its own QE with Chinese characteristics. That is, taking rates down and offering a 2 trillion yuan stimulus, that'd be around $275 billion. People are talking about that on the streets of Beijing and also Shanghai, sent directly and even electronically into household bank accounts to stimulate domestic consumption. And last but not least, China, as we all know, controls more than 90% of all global supplies of rare earth materials. These materials are essential for making, as we all know, AI chips, smartphones, and batteries, among other things. When China shocked Wall Street with DeepSeek, it seemed that nobody in Silicon Valley had seen that coming. So the long and short of it is this. We are certainly not trying to suggest in any way that China's economic model works better or is desirable for whatever it's worth. And we're also simply not yet convinced that tariffs are a good road to prosper. We think they're probably not for anyone. So expect China not to blink. This tit-for-tat discussion to go on in rather surprising and lengthy ways. And meanwhile, let's hope for a better solution. I think there is serious appetite for that, both in the White House and in Beijing. And that may very well happen in the next 100 years, even though nobody knows. Forgive me, Dan, for having rambled on your question far more longer than I really wanted here.
Well worth the time. Has surely been a lot of good food for thought on topics top of mind for our listeners. So as always, Burkhard, thank you for your time and insights this week. Why don't we leave it there with our chat and do look forward to picking back up with our conversation next week.
Well, absolutely. Thank you very much as always, Dan. It's been a great pleasure and wishing you a great continuation of the day and the week. Thanks again as always.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.